If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg, presented by Clear. Enroll today at clearme.com/Peter and try Clear at the busiest airports nationwide.
Hi there, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, we're talking the real economic power of leisure travel, as well as the power of travel and leisure, and the hot tickets to luxury travel for 2021. First, we'll discuss in real dollars and cents terms what's really going on in air travel with aviation business expert Michael Boyd. As travel comes roaring back, with leisure travel leading the way, what are the indicators that suggest confidence has returned? And actually what worries him as well. Then we'll celebrate the 50th anniversary of the magazine that chronicled it all for the last half century, Travel and Leisure, with its editor, Jackie Gifford. And finally, a report from the luxury travel front with legendary adventurer, Jeffrey Kent, the founder of Abercrombie & Kent. First up, airline battlefield economics with Michael Boyd.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.
Frontier Airlines last week announced 21 new routes from Atlanta, Las Vegas, and DFW alone. They've also announced a huge number of international routes. Spirit's doing it, Allegiant's doing it, Southwest, which you and I both know in a given year prior to the pandemic might have added one new route a year, has added, you know, a couple of dozen. And they are on the verge of becoming the predominant carrier in Hawaii. So run through this for me, Mike. What does this mean?
Well, let's put it this way. This is all driven by leisure dollars in the economy. And it's not just them. We saw carriers like American Airlines open up Dayton to Orlando. They don't have a hub at either end. They're going after leisure traffic too. United Airlines, which has been very aggressive of going into a lot of leisure markets into and out of Orlando that have no hub connections at all. They're after leisure traffic. Now, keep in mind, this is, you know, these are airlines that are looking to plumb new revenue. And keep in mind, too, that they will, as fast as they go in, they can pull out of these things. We hear a lot of press when Frontier Airlines add service out of Miami. We don't hear a lot of press when they drop those routes. So it goes up and down, and these airlines have stayed alive because they're flexible. If it doesn't work, they'll leave. And that's my concern right now, is the amount of leisure dollars in the economy and what's going to happen in the fourth quarter.
Tell me more.
Well, one of the things we see this last week, Spirit Airlines, they cut about 15% of what they had scheduled for September and in October in terms of the capacity. So they're very, very careful. They're not cutting flights, but they're cutting what growth was going to be there. So we think right now all these carriers are going to be looking at what's going to happen in the fourth quarter. And a lot of that leisure traffic, and again, airlines are chasing leisure traffic because there's leisure dollars in the economy. What happens when inflation takes those leisure dollars out? And that's already starting.
And the example I've used now for the last 2 months, so forgive me to my audience if I bring it up again, because I find it quite hilarious, is Bozeman, Montana. Because every airline that I know of, other than Boyd Airlines and Greenberg Airlines, has announced service to Bozeman. So you're talking about 200,000 seats a month into a market that might not even have 200 hotel rooms. How do you see that, you know, leveling out?
Well, they have Big Sky there, and they have a road system that goes through there. And in interest of full disclosure, Bozeman's been one of our air service development clients. And in the interest of full disclosure, it's happening all around the country. A lot of these expansion markets, you know, aren't due to somebody locally chasing after it. I mean, it's a phone rings, and suddenly Colorado Springs is a big market of ours. And a year ago, Southwest said, "We're not coming." And now they have 13 flights a day, and they're like an 80% load factor. Bozeman's been the same thing. We're just, you know, the phone rings and an airline's coming in. Airlines are making these decisions based upon what they see right now in regard to discretionary dollars. When that changes, that could go down a little bit. We're excited about Bozeman and all of Montana. But the question is, will that maintain as more inflation comes into the economy? And again, people go back to school in the fall. We'll watch that. But it's a very interesting thing.
And of course, the elephant in the room, business travel. You know, I keep thinking, and I know you're going to laugh at this, Mike, but I got to say it. I keep thinking that all you need is one Fortune 500 corporation sales team saying, all right, enough is enough. We're going to get back out on the road and physically in person meet our clients. And their competitors do not want to be at a disadvantage, and they're going to do the same thing.
I think there's a lot to that. There's no question. It's like that old United Airlines ad about 20 years ago where a guy gets up and gets his team together and gives them all tickets to go visit their people. Oh, that's fine and dandy. I maintain the majority, probably over 50% of what we're expecting to come back is already back. Because, yeah, it's great to go visit someone. But keep in mind, a lot of these meetings, and you've been through it and I've been through it, we can accomplish by virtual meetings, and that's very effective. And I think a lot of that is gone forever. I've said this before, a lot of short-haul business traffic is dead because air transportation for short-haul business traffic is massively inefficient. I've said it before, it gets to be 40,000 people in Hartford, New York. There's nobody because it's inefficient to wait for an airplane for a two-hour meeting in Manhattan when we can do it this way. But yeah, I agree. Some of it's going to come back, but it's not going to come back simply because we want to, you know, belly up to people. It's going to come back because we have to be in physical proximity with someone. And there's a lot less of that than we used to have 20 years ago.
Well, you know, I grew up at a time when everything was basically decided by who filled up the front of the cabin, business travelers, and that dictated where airlines went in many cases. There were some exceptions. And, you know, everything in the back of the plane was incremental revenue. That business model has been thrown out on its head. And now they're filling up coach and first and business class, assuming there even is first class anymore, is relatively empty in terms of revenue. So does that mean the business model has changed forever?
No, I think, well, number one, you know, this bit about, well, airlines don't have first class, they have business class. It's the same thing. They just, it's the name game. What you have is business class today was what first class was 5 years ago. What you have now is premium economy was what business class was in the 1980s. So it's really a name game, what they're calling the cabin. So, and that's another item here that prior to the COVID situation, I was told by a number of carriers that this premium economy product, which is really business class 1985, wildly profitable. So I think both domestically and internationally, it hasn't changed that much. But what's happened, as I just said, in many applications, the need to physically go to talk to somebody has been eliminated by virtual meetings and also eliminated by the fact we have a lot more information exchange via the internet. So I understand what a lot of airlines are saying, that we're looking forward to getting that business travel back. This process started long before the COVID situation, where other modes of communication were taking away some of the business travel.
Well, let me ask the big bad question then, and that is, when it doesn't come back, what happens to the airlines? Can they pivot quickly enough to change their business model?
Well, I think right now, the business model right now, airplanes are full. And I think the business model right now is, frankly, they're going to have to adjust it as the economy adjusts. And let's face it, I'm amazed by the airline industry over the last year. Where have you ever seen it, any industry where in 1 month their sales went from gangbusters to almost nothing? That happened a year ago March, and they survived. So I think they can get through this, but this argument that we have to have a lot more business travel is there, but I maintain a lot of it isn't going to come back, and they're just going to have to adjust their revenue streams accordingly.
And how are they going to do that?
Well, number one, they're adjusting their capacity very aggressively as we look forward. About 10 weeks out, you see what they filed will be adjusted one way or the other. But I think the real unknown is what's going to happen with leisure traffic, which today is gangbusters. And again, this reduction in business travel is not like it's all going away, but probably about 20% of what was there prior to COVID isn't coming back, but they were going to lose that anyway. They just lost it a lot quicker.
Oh, boy. Well, then what happens to airfares? That's the big bad question.
Oh, stand by for news. The USS... frankly, it's a torpedo. Yeah, the USS inflation has already been launched. It's on a war patrol right now because we're going to have inflation. That's going to be a problem. Fuel is another thing. Fuel last week reached basically the level it was prior to COVID, about $1.90 a gallon, and it's going up. And we have fuel shortages, at least deliveries. So that's going to go up. All that adds up to higher fares. There's going to be no doubt about it. Airlines are going to have to adjust to higher fares, and very likely fewer discretionary dollars out there. But never has the industry been in as good a position management-wise to adjust to it.
And that's because?
That's because, number one, we don't have any squirrels in the business. Number two, we're run by business people. And number three, flexibility is everything.
I mentioned Bozeman before, and there are some other secondary and tertiary city airports that I love that... you know, never really got a fair shake, at least the way I looked at it, before the pandemic. And now people are taking a second look as population starts to shift, workforce starts to shift, and business starts to shift in many cases. I mean, when you think about 40% of the American public surveyed saying that during the pandemic, they were actively considering not only just leaving their job, but leaving their location and moving to another location. And where are they looking for? That might actually apply to you in Bozeman. Where are they looking for? A place where the social distancing is baked into the deal, where they can breathe, where the cost of living is lower, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they may even do a job change in the process. But I'm looking at some airports like Madison, Wisconsin. I'm looking at airports like Syracuse, New York. I'm looking at airports like Islip out in Long Island, which is one of my favorite airports that I don't think gets a fair shake at all, because you have a population base in Long Island of about 3 million people who would really want to do everything in their power not to fly out of LaGuardia or Kennedy if they could. So what's happening with those airports?
Well, those airports like Islip has always been kind of like on the edge. Right now, Islip is, you know, that's a standalone market now. It's not another access point to New York. You know, no one flies into Islip, hops on the LIE, and 4 hours later in traffic gets to Manhattan. That just doesn't happen. I think you're looking at those things, but let me give you a statistic. Our five-year forecast through 2025, regionally, we show the Rocky Mountain region to grow 30% over 2019. We show the Mid-Atlantic states to drop by about 2.5%. Why? People are moving to where, as you just pointed out, we have a better quality of life. And because of that, you know, I mean, listen, there's a diaspora running off to Boise, Idaho. You can't buy a house in Boise today, by the way. There's none available because people want to live in those kind of places. But it's the same thing you mentioned. A Madison, Wisconsin, well, you know, that's a major city, if you will, but it's a very nice place to live. But watch other places. You mentioned Bozeman. There's other. There's Colorado Springs. There's Boise. there's Spokane, places like that. That's where people are going to move. And when they move there, they take their business with it.
And any real surprise airports you want to share with me?
Well, yeah, I think we're looking at like Boise being one, no question. The quality of life there is incredible. Its geographic location is, if you're in Boise, there's not a lot of the airports to use, and they've got great air service, so they capture everything they generate. That's one. Colorado Springs is another one. Massive. That's one of the fastest growing airports. And again, like I said, 2 years, a year and a half ago, Southwest told us, no way we're going to come there. Well, guess what? There's 13 flights a day, and they're adding, and so are other airlines. Because quality of life is incredible in the Colorado corridor. So we're going to see more and more of that. And again, like I said, the mid-Atlantic states, you're not going to see much growth. And the main reason is quality of life.
Wow. So your crystal ball is, if you're airline scheduling, you're relocating your assets.
No, absolutely. The real growth is going to be in the Southeast, the deep South, and in the Rocky Mountain region, and other areas are going to be there. But where you're going to see some real pullbacks, you mentioned Islip, that whole region's fine. We're not going to see a whole lot of growth. We may see transfer of traffic where people in, let's just say, Western, if you want to call it that, Western Nassau County of Garden City, that area, they might start driving more to Islip. But it's not necessarily net new traffic.
Although, if you take a look at the route networks out of Islip, they're not doing a lot of east-west travel. They're doing north-south. They're doing, Tampa, Orlando, West Palm, but not Las Vegas, not L.A., not even Chicago.
Well, that's another point. It's not a major gateway to the nation. It's a leisure gateway. But if someone wants to get, like I said, let's just say to Tucson or Spokane, they're not flying out of Islip. They're again on there on the LIE or the Northern State getting to LaGuardia. And by the way, I understand they've done magic with my favorite airport in America, which is LaGuardia. I almost grew up there. My father's office was there. My first job was there. So I do not brook anybody beating up LaGuardia Airport. And I'm biased.
Well, listen, they've done a great job of modernizing the airport. The terminals are gleaming. They're clean. They're beautiful. One small problem, the walk from the counter to the gate, it's like 30 minutes. It's wild.
I have not been there because, they've torn down a lot of things that were very, very, very close to me, like my father's old office at American and whatnot. But LaGuardia to me is, people badmouth LaGuardia before or since. Why? LaGuardia back in 1939 was what the whole world looked at.
That's true. That's true. And I think they're going to retain two of the three old LaGuardia hangars as historic monuments. I hope they do. And of course, you have the old Marine Air Terminal there where the old Pan Am Clippers used to fly on the water. Now that's, I think it's Spirit and JetBlue is over there for the moment, and they also may move. But the bottom line is when Joe Biden called LaGuardia Airport a third world airport, he was insulting a lot of third world airports at that time because LaGuardia really was in trouble. Now, if they can just figure out how the guys who designed the airport can get people from the counter to the gate, then it's a home run. It really is.
It's magic. I mean, to do what they did is magic because the place is about the size of a Midwestern shopping center, and look what they've done. It's incredible.
You're right, with about the same amount of retail there these days. My thanks to Michael. It's a magazine I've been reading almost all my life, and it's almost hard to believe, but Travel and Leisure celebrates its 50th birthday this year. And what a perfect and pivotal time to talk about the magazine, the stories it's covered, and the places it's taken us, with Editor-in-Chief Jackie Gifford.
Can you believe Travel and Leisure is 50? I'm just so, it's such a big anniversary for us. We're just so thrilled.
Well, I go back to the days of Caskey Sinet and Nancy Novograd and your predecessors. And it was and still is a magazine that I read cover to cover, not because I'm a journalist, but because I'm a traveler.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Yeah, I gathered together. One thing that was really amazing for this big issue is I gathered all the former editor-in-chief over Zoom, believe it or not, to talk about their time running this brand. We've had six editor-in-chiefs. You mentioned Caskey, who passed away a little bit ago, and the others are are still live, and I was able to talk to Pamela Fiore, Isla Stanger, Nancy Novogratz, and Nathan Lump. And what was really moving to me was just hearing them share their stories about the ebbs. I call it the ebbs and flows of travel, and just how there are these really high highs and sometimes these really low lows. Like after 9/11, when Nancy was editor-in-chief and she and her team had to scramble to come up with an issue that felt relevant and smart for the times. And I lived through that myself with COVID-19 and coming up with an issue that felt meaningful and also not tone deaf. And so we talked through these things, and it was really great to just share stories. And then overall, we all just felt optimistic about travel and just so thrilled that we were able to have these jobs.
Well, talking to the former travel and leisure editors-in-chief about the turning points in travel, you know, we already know some of them, right? 9/11, the economic debacle in 2008 and 2009, even the volcano exploding in Iceland in 2010, and of course, COVID-19, but their experience, you know, predates that. Are there any similarities in how the industry responded or where it went after that?
That's a great question. I would say that there's always a period of uncertainty and you know, that right after the event, right? And people, you know, they don't know what to do. There's this moment of panic. And then I would say the similarities, the through line that I found in talking to all the editors is that you just have to double down on what you do best and understand that fundamentally people want to be around other people and travel again. And so that unshakable faith, I think, gets people through the downtimes, because you just know that you'll come out of it. That fundamentally moving around the world and seeing other cultures is just the history of humanity, right? I mean, that's just what we do, and it's never going to change. And so that's, I think, whether it was, you know, Pamela mentioned to me several times, but in the 70s, you know, terrorist attacks on planes, hijackings, things like that, that was out there, and people were nervous. And then we had the Gulf War and the 90s and 9/11, all these big events that really transformed travel, and people were scared, and then they started to get out there again. And I think what we're seeing this summer certainly is that people are traveling. And last summer it was, you know, even last summer people were traveling, and now in some ways, you know, the airlines are finally, this quarter, some of them are profitable, and we're seeing, you know, 2019 levels in terms of demand at the airport, and now at some properties they're even exceeding 2019 levels. That wasn't even fathomable 6 months ago. So I think the one fundamental through line is that people want to travel. They want to be around other people. They want to experience other cultures. And so when there are these dips, you just have to hold on to that hope, and you know that better times are ahead.
All right. So let's keep with this theme of how we respond, how we pivot. I'm one of those people who always argues that we don't just want to travel. We need to travel. It's part of our cultural DNA. So just giving the opportunity is when we jump all over the place, which is what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's part of who we are as human beings, as people. We crave learning and growth. And I think that I actually just got back from a trip to Kenya for 2 weeks. I went with a company called Roar Africa, and we stayed at multiple lodges, Angama Mara and the Maasai Mara National Reserve, Sinchatans in Tsavo West, Sagara in Laikipia, and Cotter's Camp. We stayed at these four different places because they all offered a different experience. And I brought my son, and was traveling to Africa a little scary during this time? Sure. But the minute I set foot on the plane and the doors closed and I was off and ready to go, it just felt like, okay, I can do this. And I was impressed by everything on the ground in terms of protocols, how safe we felt. And ultimately, I think the trip reminded me of why I do this and why I do this for a living, why you do this for a living. And I actually felt like I came back restored because I was able to switch off for a little bit and really open my eyes in a way that I don't know if I wouldn't have traveled the same way in 2019. I probably would have felt a little bit more rushed, and I really just sort of savored the whole experience.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
Listen, I go back to the days of Holiday Magazine. So
that's a great magazine. Oh, Peter, that was a great magazine, wasn't it?
It really was. It really was. But now let's move forward here for a second, because you know you've got your ear to the ground. You mentioned you went to Kenya. So many people now are making their travel decisions based on a bucket list that wasn't around last year or the year before. They're basing their decisions based on how far away they can go, how free they can be when they be there. Can they breathe? Is the social distancing baked into the destination? I'm assuming you're seeing the same thing.
We are. The thing that nobody could have predicted, I think, this sort of the, well, first of all, I think what we're seeing in the United States, the demand for hotels is just off the charts right now. People want to go to resorts and be at the beach, be with their family. The multi-generational travel trend is booming right now because families are separated so long. So whether it's, you know, a place like Newport, Rhode Island or Palm Beach or the coast of California, there's this demand for vacation rentals, villas, homes. People are booking suites and they're staying longer in some of these hotels than they ever have before. And then on the flip side, you know, an interesting thing, I live here in New York City, and some of our city hotels are doing just fine. And you know, we've got properties are bouncing back here, not all of them, but some of them are. And I think that's in part because people want to go out and experience fine dining and restaurants because they were deprived of that experience for so long. So I'll say this. I think that there's some tweaks to the behavior, right? People want to know that when they check into a property that there's safety measures in place. So a lot of that back of the house stuff that hotels used to do, whether it was extra cleaning or, you know, learning about air filtration in hotels, whoever thought that that would be something that hotels would have to explain, but they're doing it. The airlines have done a good job of that as well. So some of these things, you know, were already in place, and they're just being pushed up to the front of travelers' mind. And then in some instances, hotels have come up with entirely new concepts. I mean, I stayed at the Chandler in Newport, Rhode Island over the spring, and what was fascinating, they created these whole beautiful yurts where people could dine outdoors, you know, during the winter and have great meals and be outside. And this is not, and they decorated them beautifully. I saw many restaurants do that in Manhattan, and they've added a bit of fun and whimsy. And of course, the safety measures are in place and people feel great about doing outdoor dining. So I think it sparked a really tremendous moment for creativity in the hospitality industry. And there are definite challenges. I don't want to be Pollyanna about it, because we're seeing labor shortages at hotels. We're seeing labor shortages, you know, at restaurants. It's hard for people to hire people back right now. And there's a lot of reasons why that is. And I think that ultimately, though, and we're seeing it even too with the airlines, right? Customer service lines are to call and you want to get a hold of somebody on the phone to help with your flight. Like, good luck right now. It's really hard. But I will.
Well, I got one for you.
Oh, good.
Delta Airlines. I did this as a test. And it gets me so angry because it's not just Delta, it's United and it's American. And what it is, you call up the reservations number, and of course, they're all busy, they can't take your call, and they go, please hold. And then they say, at the end of the call, please stay on the line for a 2-minute survey on our service. Well, the end of the call doesn't happen. In my last wait for Delta Airlines, I just put them on the speakerphone just to see how long it would take. 3 hours and 10 minutes. Okay. And so basically, here's my 2-minute survey for them. You can't be serious. That's it. Because what else do they want me to tell them? That I'm not going to spend another 2 minutes on the phone after 3 hours and 10 minutes to tell them how great they're doing, because they're not.
Yeah. I would say this, having flown several times during this experience, and I've flown when the airports were basically empty, and I've flown when they've been packed to the gills now with people. I think that if you're going out, and certainly flying domestically right now, long gone are the days when you would see those pictures of airports and they were completely devoid of people, right? So your experience that you had, which is unfortunate, this is an experience that multiple people are having right now. And I think the thing that people don't expect, I think people have these visuals in their mind of empty airports, and that's just not the case anymore. So you've got to go and understand that, you know, the lines are going to be long. It's not like you're going to breeze through security anymore. multiple, you know, at some airports, not everything is still open yet, whether it's restaurants or shops or things. But you know, people are going, expecting them to be. And then the other part of it is, you know, when you're actually flying, I think some people, because they're losing their patience, the experience can feel a little unpleasant. That said, I think that this is going to get ironed out, and I would imagine it's going to be ironed out within the next year.
My thanks to Jackie. When it comes to the word safari, one name is at the front, Jeffrey Kent. He's the penultimate luxury tour operator in Africa and just about all other parts of the world as well. And now, as travel comes roaring back, Jeffrey gives us his insight on the hot spots, not to mention travel safety. Obviously, the pandemic shutting down so much of the world, and in fact, so much of what Abercrombie and Kent was doing, especially in countries like Africa, where, of course, your name first surfaced in the and of course your book by the same title, Safari, about exploring that continent. We're looking at a continent even today where the vaccination rates are under 7%, not very helpful there. And yet, you know, the impact of the pandemic during the pandemic in Africa, in terms of tourism, in terms of economics, and in terms of people being able to put food on the table. You know, the rangers, the tour guides, the safari operators. I mean, it's been a very devastating time.
I mean, I can't disagree with you. It has. And unfortunately, even right now, you've got South Africa and Botswana in the red zone, Kenya and Namibia, you know. And the problem is, if you go there and somebody catches COVID, then you've got to go into quarantine. So I think, you know, well, everybody wants to go to Africa. Indeed, once you get there, it's the best place to be. Isolated camps, lots of adventure, outdoors. It'll take off. But in the meantime, it's difficult. Luckily, for Abercrombie and Kent, you know, we're very big in Europe, and it's actually our largest destination, believe it or not. And so, you know, beginning to boom there. But the fact is, everybody wants to travel. Everybody calls me, can we go? Where can we go? What can we do? Where's next? And so, this huge plethora of desire, and we just got to fulfill it as we move along. But, you know, I was once a polo player, and one thing I learned playing polo, you have to be nimble and very, very fast. So that's how we are now.
Well, let's start with Africa, then move over to Europe. Obviously, things are getting better slowly in Africa. You've resumed your operations there, of course. I would think at this point, since social distancing is almost baked into the African experience, it's a great time to be on a safari now.
Well, I mean, I leave myself in 3 weeks' time. I'm off taking the whole family basically to Malindi, the beach, and then we're going to Maasai Mara to our lovely camp, Olenana. I'm trying to get space in the Jeffrey Kent suite, but luckily it's so popular. Unless I throw somebody out, it's a difficult one. So I think I'll just be a normal guy in Olenana and not have a suite. But yeah, we'll be back there. I was going up north, going helicopters up in Laikipia area. And I cannot wait to get back. And, you know, when you get there, it's all very calm. So a lot of this is made up. A lot of it is media related. And one has to keep calm. That's why I said, you know, I'll go myself and really try and get to grips with everything.
When you say it's sort of made up and media related, of course, that you're talking about guys like me. So we have to be careful here. In what way do you say it's made up and media related? I have to ask.
Well, I think it's all been... Peter, you're the great exception. You're the great traveler. But a lot of people haven't traveled. And especially the UK news is always on about how many extra COVID cases. Is it 50,000, 100,000? Is it going to triple, quadruple in the next month? And we have another, you know, big case. Is it safe? You know, the hospitals. And it goes on and on and on. You know, and I'm as long as this takes center news, people do get very concerned.
I know there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect between policy and actual, you know, actual manifestation. But I'm assuming that now that it's coming back, the real question is, how is it coming back and how is it expressing itself? So, for example, in the U.S., every plane is full. Airfares are going up at about 10% a week, and that's compounded. Hotel rates are up 36%. Rental car rates are up 86%. Are you seeing that in your business as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think what's going to happen, Peter, is using the whole pod technique, you know, so that Americans are allowed to come to Europe. They can go to Iceland. They can, so they're almost coming like a one-stop stay. So they can take a beautiful villa in Italy, indeed, in south of France. They can go to Iceland. They can go take a yacht in Greece, cruise the Greek islands. So you can do that. Equally so, you know, I'm launching an expedition to the Cocos Islands off Costa Rica in January. You know, it's a submarine on board a ship with a super yacht alongside. But that's one destination. They, that you know you can do. It's when you have cross borders, you know, one, two, three, that becomes a problem. Because then you've got to take a COVID test before you leave. COVID test when you arrive. It becomes more complicated.
So in the luxury travel market, my guess is that all of this money's been sitting on the sidelines for 15 months, burning a hole in everybody's pocket, and people just can't wait to go. And they're not as price sensitive as they used to be. I mean, if you, for example, if you wanted to fly a personal jet or fly privately to Maui, you could, but the problem is there's no place to park the jet. The airport doesn't have any space anymore for the private jets. I'm assuming that in some of the usual suspect destinations, whether it's St. Bart's or not far from where you are, of course, in Monaco, you have a similar situation.
Well, you do, but you know, luckily Abercrombie Kent, we're mainly adventure-based. So we don't have that situation. So anybody who doesn't want to get bored in St. Bart's would like a big adventure, we can do that. You know, we still got a lot of people coming to Egypt. Egypt's very busy. Ships are full. Kenya's still very busy. Very busy.
Let's talk about Egypt for a second. Because I remember being in Egypt before the pandemic, where you had, not you, but the Egyptians had about 44 boats that normally would be on the Nile down in Luxor, and they were operating maybe four of them. Then, of course, you had the pandemic. Now we're coming out of the pandemic. Are you saying that the boats are back all operating?
Yeah, I mean, our boats are back fairly busy, not the full fleet, but I mean, certainly we've got two boats operating full. Armour was over with us last weekend. You remember Armour, he took you on a big trip in Egypt once.
He did.
And yeah, business coming back, especially from the Gulf States. Remember, you know, Americans are not the only travelers. We have very rich Middle Eastern families who traveled, can't wait to get out. They've been in lockdown too. And so it's an international market. What about the rich Swiss? They want to get out. And so there's a big international market here. But as you say, quite a lot is shut down. You know, India, I wouldn't go to India right now. Australia is locked down, so that's a problem. So we're operating where we can, and where we can, there is a huge demand. Yeah.
So where is it that, are you actually in a situation where you're oversold at this point?
No. You'll never see me oversell. You know that, Peter. I'll build a boat rather than turn a booking down.
I'll hold you to that one next time I need a boat. But the thing is, if you take a look at where everybody is going, are they going based on a bucket list of where they've always wanted to go? Or now they just say, get me anywhere. I'll go anywhere.
No, they want to go. They want to get me anywhere as long as it's safe. This is a big thing. Is it safe? And do we get home? You know, and are you always on the end of a phone to call if there's a problem? And I said, yes, or our staff are anyhow. I always am, but at least that's the one thing that concerns them. They don't want to travel and arrive in the place with their families and for whatever reason can't return home.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's really, I've said this all along. It's not what people are talking about. It's what they're thinking about. And it's exactly that, Jeffrey, that they want to go, but they don't want to get stuck. And so what do you tell them? I mean, is it about insurance? Is it about, getting the proper kind of insurance? Because as you may know, during the pandemic, so many travelers discovered that the insurance that they purchased was essentially worthless because there was a clause in the policy that said, we don't cover for pandemic. So as a travel provider, what kind of assurances are you giving your clients that they are going to be protected?
Well, the first assurance is, Peter, that I've been doing this since April 1962, all right, which is quite a long time ago. Yes. And our brand has had many experiences, as you well know, around the world with incidences, all right? And we've always delivered. We personally deliver. We will get them out. You don't need insurance. If there's a problem, we will fly them out, get them out. And we're always on the phone. And as you know, we own our ground operating company. All other travel companies have to send their clients to agents, to ground operators, which they don't own. We own all of our. So it's within the family. You know, we literally cover what I call the last mile of every trip. So it's really our personal guarantee. We said, no, as things are today, and for when you will travel, we will get you out. And we can. So it's basically, this is where the brand comes in. I think, you know, everyone said, oh, you have a great brand. So what good's a brand if it doesn't behove you in some way?
Where is right now the hottest spot that you're going, the one that's the most popular?
I think the hottest spot is individual tailor-made travel. Like yesterday, I booked a group of New Yorkers taking their G5, and they're going to do, in December, everyone's booking line about October, November, December. They're going to do Patagonia. They're going to go to South America. They're going to do Atacama, all those wondrous places. So South America is becoming very, very popular. Why? It's near. There's no jet lag, no big time difference, and they feel that it's close. So I think South America will really take off for the adventure side. Europe has gone bananas. Very few villas are left. You know, people like villas for the summer. Hardly any of those left. They're pretty well sold out. Europe will continue, and hopefully by December, Botswana's back, Africa's back. Antarctica, I think, is going to be fine. We hope. We're still praying for that. It's looking good so far. So, you know, expedition cruising starts taking place again. The problem is, Peter, everything changes. You and I having this talk today, everything we're saying now could be changed. We don't know.
Well, the metrics, I think, have changed from the focus on the vaccination level at the destination to the vaccination level of the people who want to go to that destination, which is why the European Union opened up to vaccinated Americans. But at the same time, we still have other countries that are closed, Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand. Should we write them off for the rest of this year?
I think you have to write everything off for about, you know, the bad one, like for 3 months, 2 to 3 months until you can see, right? But it could all clear. You never know. I mean, so, you know, I don't know. It's really hard to forecast. And you know, the key thing is give people what they want. What do they want? They want a dedicated tour counselor with a huge amount of knowledge to guide them, to tell them where they're going, and above all, to advise them when they have to have COVID shots, fill out their locator form so that that's all done for them, right? It's very complicated. I don't know if you've been traveling to Europe. I mean, you've got to have the vaccination form, you've got to have the COVID test, and then you've got to have a locator form. And then they call you all day long, you know? And so all that has to be answered by somebody. And so people want, where's a hand to hold? And, you know, at Abercrombie & Kent, we've been doing that for 100 years, almost. that's where it is. But it's just going to be, people will want private travel. They must talk to somebody. They're not just, I don't see huge people rushing, you know, like you may buy your groceries online. I don't know. I don't see many people but high-end travel booking it online. I think they want to know somebody and get their money back. Who's going to be doing it?
No, they want to have a conversation.
They want to have a conversation.
And that's really what we learned in the pandemic, that people who booked online couldn't have a conversation. They're still waiting for their money back. The travel advisors and the travel agents really did a stellar job of advocating for passengers and for travelers. And they're the ones who stayed in the conversation. Otherwise, people just got literally lost in the shuffle. Now, you talk, Jeffrey, about, you know, doing very specific destinations where you're not crossing a lot of borders. And yet, one of the things that you're known for is your private jet tour that goes to many different destinations. Are you still going to operate that?
Well, that's a very, I'm leaning back in my seat. That's a sort of well-aimed arrow. Actually, I'm having a big conference call on that immediately after we finish tonight, so I can't give you a direct answer. But it's complicated. And, you know, if we can't guarantee it, I doubt we'll run it, but we don't know yet. I'll have this, having a conference call in an hour's time, and then we'll know a lot more. But, you know, maybe we should be doing more sort of 8-day trips. You know, go to one, as I said before, an 8-day trip to Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. So it's all in one place, which you could limit. But I think going around the world, the problem is going to be landing of the planes. And say that one person gets COVID. I've just been reading about the cruise ship industry, right? Say that one person gets COVID on a plane. What happens? You have to stop, right? It's, and you got to go and quarantine. Then what? So it's, you know, I mean, I think that this year, we'll see.
As you sit back in your seat, what's the one overriding lesson, Jeffrey, that you've learned during the pandemic about how to move forward now?
Cash, 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 cash. That's the one abiding thing. Got to have a lot of cash is king, right? No debt, lots of cash. And so luckily we have that. And that's been very, very helpful.
I mean, in your case, you had the reserves to withstand the storm, if you will. But for so many other companies, they didn't. And not only did they go out of business, but they, in many cases, didn't refund the money to their customers.
And that's terrible. I mean, that's the worst thing you could have, because basically customers are out all the money, and then the companies go bankrupt. It's really, really bad.
Moving forward, let's look ahead. Let's crystal ball this 3 or 4 months ahead. So we're now at the beginning of the next year. Let's crystal ball this, Jeffrey. By 2022, is travel really going to be back?
I believe by the second quarter, it'll be back very firm and strong. By that time, we should be over all the incidences you and I have just been discussing. I'm very, very hopeful. Maybe first quarter 22, but certainly second quarter. 2Q 22 should be back.
And is there a destination now that you're not going to that is going to be the new hot destination predicted by you for 2022?
Well, that's a good one. I think they sort of go down to our inspiring expeditions. So it's something I can control. It's just a short movement of people, and we're going to do an amazing one to the UK. We're going to go to all the castles. We have great friends of mine around UK and Scotland, by helicopters, meeting all the hosts who are all friends of mine. And so I think that's going to be an amazing trip. Fine wine, dining. And I think, I think that'll be very exciting. For instance, it's one thing. So we may take known destinations to which we can go and then have some unusual itinerary within.
My thanks to Jeffrey, to Michael Boyd, and to Jackie Gifford. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel and answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, just log on to petergreenberg.com.
Special thanks to our sponsors at Clear. Enroll in Clear at clearme.com/Peter and zip through busy airports nationwide.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.